Well, I had this idea that the gods had been living in maybe lots of different places. We know that after they were in Greece, they were in Rome, so I think maybe they've been travelling the world for a while. They arrive in London in the 17th century, just between the plague and the fire. So, you know, the property prices are very low, and they're going to make a big profit on their house. But then things go a bit wrong for them, and they can never leave. So they've been stuck in London for 400 years, and they're kind of sick of it by now. They're really not having a good time anymore.
So let's talk about who exactly is in this rundown place in Hampstead. Well, it's just it's Aphrodite.
So there are 12 gods sharing a house with only about 4 bedrooms. So you can imagine it's a bit of a tight squeeze. There's Aphrodite, who's the goddess of love. Only these days she has to do telephone sex to make money, because that's the thing she's best suited for. There's Apollo, who's the god of the sun, and he now works as a TV psychic. Artemis, who's the goddess of...
A TV psychic, maybe we have to explain.
He's
on television.
He's on a channel that nobody watches, and he's on television, and he can tell the future, so he tells you what's going to happen in your life. But he's not very good at it, so it doesn't go very well for him. They're all just trying to get by. Artemis, who's the goddess of the hunt, walks dogs for a living. Dionysus, who's the god of wine, has a bar. You know, so they've all found jobs that are suitable for the gods that they are, but you know, they're just scraping by.
So the English title of your novel is Gods Behaving Badly. Was there once a time when they were behaving better? Or?
No, I don't think the gods have ever behaved very well. That's what's so much fun about Greek gods, is they are... they're just like humans, but bigger. You know, they're angrier than us. They're more jealous than us. They're more arrogant than we are. So they're like almost like cartoons. And you know, that's really fun to play with as an author, because you just imagine the worst possible way you would react to any given situation, and that's what a god would do.
But is that also, if you look at them, is that more? It's not humane. They are not more humane, but they are more human. They are more like us, right? I mean, it's when you compare them to Jesus. Jesus is always very profoundly good person. And
yes, I think that the Greek gods are always a projection of the way the Greeks saw themselves. So they're like an exaggeration of everything that's human. So they're almost more human than the humans. But for me, I see them like children who don't kind of can't see outside their own world. Who think that they're so, so very important, and they never think of anyone but themselves. Not because they're cruel or selfish people, but just because they don't know any other way of thinking. So they're like overgrown toddlers running around and causing havoc all the time.
And how did you come up with the idea of writing about ancient gods, about in modern society? Do you have a special love for the old tales, or?
Well, I always enjoyed reading them. We read them at school, and then I saw those, you know, those films, the sort of brightly coloured films from the 60s and 70s with Charlton Heston wearing sandals and monsters made from plasticine, and I kind of wanted to capture the spirit of that. But the idea to actually write the book came from I was helping a friend of mine who was making a film in a school, and there was a teacher who was talking about the differences between the Greek gods and the Christian god, and that the Greek gods are so sort of difficult and so on. And I remember thinking, you know, well, what if the Greeks were right? What if we're wrong and the Greeks were right, and it really was these gods? People used to believe in them once. Well, you know, what if they were still around? Where would they be, and what would they be doing? And the whole sort of story came from that.
And when you are in the novel, you get the impression that all the gods are just another dysfunctional family who would need some serious good advice. And at one point, somebody says, "Well, I hate this family. It's just I want to move out." And are the gods just another dysfunctional family?
Yeah, it'd be fun. That makes me think it'd be fun to write a sequel where they go to therapy, you know, and talk it all through. It's like, if you can imagine living with your family, no matter how much you love them, you start winding each other up. But imagine living with your family for, you know, 2,000 years with only one bathroom and no one wants to do the washing up. You start to really want to kill each other. So they're constantly arguing and fighting and plotting revenge, and they've got all these, you know, tensions between them that they've had for all these hundreds and thousands of years, and you know, they're kind of sick of the sight of each other. But then on the other hand, no one else understands them. No one knows what it's like to be a god except another god. So in the end, they only have each other, so they have no choice really but to stick together.
Let's talk about the concept of immortality a little bit, because it's also, you already pointed it out, it's, they have so much time on their hands and everything seems so totally boring for them. For example, sex, they have a lot of sex in the book, but it's not quite the same thing because, you know, it's...
No, I mean, you might think like having sex until the end of time sounds great, but I think after the first, you know, few hundred years, it would get a little bit dull. I think, you know, the serious point I feel is that I think if you're immortal, you have nothing to lose. And if you have nothing to lose, then you don't know the value of anything. Nothing is important. You know, if someone leaves your life, someone else will come along and take their place, you know, and nothing will come along to harm you. So everything becomes sort of boring. Everything has the same value. There's nothing special, because I think what gives something, one of the things that gives something value is the fear that you might lose it. And actually, being human, being mortal, means that eventually we will all lose everything. And so the people that you love are so precious to you because you know you only have a limited amount of time with them. And the gods don't have this, so they're kind of trapped in this sort of, this playground.
Vicious circle.
Yeah, I sort of imagine it, there's in Pinocchio, when they go to the world that's all fun, but then everyone turns into a donkey and it turns out it wasn't that much fun after all. They're just, you know, they're playing, but they've been playing for so long, then there's no substance. And so eventually you would just, it's not fun anymore.
There's another illusion which comes up. It's also, they also seem like celebrities who used to be very famous, and it's like in the tabloids, there are people who, for one reason or another, aren't famous anymore, and you see them in jogging pants in the liquor store and carrying a basket with something.
Yeah.
Is it like that? Is that another illusion that you chose?
It is. I think, with I don't know what it's like in Germany, but in Britain we're a society who are obsessed with the famous. But what we really love to see is the famous gone bad. The Amy Winehouse and Britney Spears, you know, with drinking problems and drug problems and out of control. And I think there is, there's something in fame that one of the things that's so attractive to us about watching fame is watching people lose fame. And the fear when you've lived in the public eye suddenly disappearing and nobody knows who you are I should think that's really a very real fear. But I think it's also to do with how maybe we all feel about getting older, about losing our sexual attractiveness, about, you know, when you're young and you know, you're the center of attention, everyone's interested in you, everyone, you know, you're fashionable, you're well dressed, and then as you get older suddenly no one cares what you're wearing and no one's looking at you anymore. And in our society, anyway, we don't value older people, and so they become, there's this fear that as you get older, you will become irrelevant. And I think the gods in the book are just at that point where they're starting to realize that they were the center of the universe once, but nobody cares anymore, and they're just fading away.
Everything you write in the book, everything got worse when this guy Jesus turned up. You know, that's more or less was the breaking point.
Yeah, they're really not very happy with Christianity because that was really the point at which it all started to go wrong for the Greek gods. And much to the god family's irritation, one of the gods, Eros, has decided that he thinks that Jesus is a better role model than the Greek gods. Which, I mean, to be fair, he's not wrong about that. So even though he knows that Jesus is not really any kind of god at all, he has become a Christian, which rather annoys everybody else in the family. But he thinks, no, people should be Christian because it's all about loving your neighbor and being nice to each other, whereas we're all about having wars and raping people, you know, that you shouldn't follow the example of the gods. So for me, it's a playful way of asking, you know, do we believe in things because they're true, or do we believe in things because we need it in society? Is religion something that is real, that comes from actual gods that we know about, or is it something that we've invented to help tell us what to do?
I read all the articles which appeared in British newspapers, and everybody was writing about how light-handed your writing is and how nice is your humor. But is there also a diagnosis behind that? About modern society, which is important to you, and about religion, for example?
Well, I think I read a lot, and I sometimes find, not with every book, but there can be very serious books with lots of philosophical ideas, but that are quite difficult to read. And then there are books that are a lot of fun, but then they don't have much substance. They don't necessarily have a lot of ideas. And I wanted to write a book that had ideas in it, but that was as fun to read as, you know, any kind of, like, beach novel. So, you know, what I hope is that when people are reading it, they're really having fun and laughing and enjoying the story. But then also, it makes them think about certain deeper questions. And I do think it's almost impossible to write about gods without bringing up these issues of sort of immortality and life after death and the nature of belief and that kind of thing. But, you know, I want it to almost be hidden, you know, so you almost don't notice. You don't notice that that's what you're reading about. And then suddenly you realize that you know, that these things, these thoughts are in your mind. So it's a difficult balance to get right between, you know, exploring the deeper questions, but in a way that people would still find to be a lot of fun.
And you just mentioned the nature of belief is important for you. Is that also one of the main themes?
Yes, I think so. I think one of the things that I was writing about is that really, on the whole, at least in Britain, we're a society which is very non-religious. Very few people go to church. I'm not Christian myself. So I don't go to church.
But you used to be Christian and just...
Oh, when I was 13, I think I had a phase for about a year where it all seemed very exciting, and then one day I thought, no, hang on, I don't believe this anymore. And, you know, religion has been such an important part of every society at some point. You've got to ask yourself, well, what is it for? And are we missing something? If we don't have it, is there something missing? And I think there's a sort of... there's something seductive about faith, and there's almost an innocence in belief. You know, you just hand something over. So, I mean, that was one of the things I was looking at. And also to ask, who needs each other more? Do we need God, or does God need us? And in a way, I feel in this book that the gods need to be worshipped more than we need to worship them.
I mean, we live in a time when religion and belief have been... have become very, very important for politics again. If you look at the America and the election process, also religion plays a big role. And last election in America has also played a big role. So is that something that is, it doesn't seem very contemporary, but it's the...
Yeah, I mean, it's still there and it really does endure. And I think one of the things that that I had fun with in this book is that the world religions now are pretty much based on the fact that God is good. And so having God on your side is a really good thing. Like, I am right and I have God, and God says I'm right and therefore I'm right. But if the gods are not good, then what the hell are you left with? You've got this rabble of gods who are even worse than you are. And so, you know, if you've got God on your side, that's not necessarily a very good position to be in. You might not want to be on God's side at all. So, you know, I think that people use religion as a justification. It's like anything you can attach religion to immediately makes it better and right. But that only works if you've got a sort of an idea of God that's very positive. But when you're playing with gods who are you know, scheming and dark, then it you know, really complicates everything.
In the beginning, I pointed out this was your first book, but actually you have already written one just for yourself, or?
I've written a few, but I started when I was about 7. So, you know, I tried to write a book when I was 8, and I wrote, you know, 2 chapters and drew some pictures, and I was like, God, you know, it's really hard work writing a book. I couldn't quite figure out why I couldn't finish it, why I couldn't write something like Watership Down, you know. I've written 2 pages, I'm bored, help. And then as I grew up, when I was a teenager, I wrote this crazy book about Scotland in the Victorian times and ghosts haunting and sort of bagpipes and all kinds of crazy things. I'd never even been to Scotland, but I just thought it sounded like fun, so I made it all up. And then, you know, so I've carried on, and I wrote 1 serious novel before this one that was not published. But yeah, I've always... You know,
you also, I read that you also sent it to publishing houses, and they turned it down.
Yeah.
But what they wrote in the response was nevertheless for you was something that...
Well, they said that it was that the writing was good, but the idea wasn't. And I'm like, oh, well, that's okay. I can have more ideas, you know. If you're an author, people will say, oh, where do you get your ideas? Where do you get your ideas? You only need to have one idea every 2 years. You don't need that many because it takes so long to write a book. So I'm like, oh, well, you know, within the next 2 years, I'm sure I'll come up with another idea. So I wasn't too scared off by that. If they'd said, oh, this is a great idea, but you can't write, then I would have been a bit more worried.
And how did you come up with the idea to use something that's already existing, like those typecast gods, and transfer it into, because the regular debutante novel is about, well, how I'm feeling today and how I'm feeling with my friends and stuff. It's like very introspective, self-centered prose sometimes.
I don't think I'm that interesting. I really wouldn't want to read a book about my life. It would be really, really boring. So I thought, okay, no way. There is no way I'm writing a book about me. I woke up, I felt cheerful. I watched some television. I went to bed. But with this, it was, you know, it was a bit like playing with dolls. I always liked playing with dolls when I was younger. So you have these characters who, if you've read any of the mythology, the characters are amazing. You know, I didn't come up with them all by myself. They're so striking. So it's like having toys. It was like a game. So I had these toys, like Smurfs, you know, and they all have their different personalities. And then I put them in the situation and move them around, and the whole thing is a game. So for me, it was really good fun, because it was, you know, my debut novel. It did give me a bit of a framework to work in. I didn't have to just invent an entire world by myself, which I think would have been really, really hard for a first proper novel. But it was really good fun. And I think people can, you know, if I say to you, oh, well, what would the Greek gods be doing now? Probably you yourselves could think of a number of things they could be doing. It's quite an easy, fun game to play.
And I also read in an article about how your book was actually discovered. That was, and another journalist wrote about it, that was also could have been the plot of a movie by itself, because you were writing, you were working in a bookstore, and you
yeah.
were...
I was just working in a bookshop, which is a really good place to work if you're a writer, because you're surrounded by books, you're surrounded by people who love books, and more to the point, you're surrounded by people who work in publishing, the kind of people you never normally meet. And it just happened that someone who is just a bookseller for the publisher that I now publish by came in one day. I wasn't even there, and my boss said to him, oh, our shop assistant has written this book. And he said, oh, there's a nice editor at my publishing house. She should send it to him.
But is that... how often does that happen?
That never happens.
Because there are a lot of people who...
No, it never happens.
You have novels in their drawers and nobody wants to read them.
Yeah. No, what's supposed to happen is you get your book, of your list of publishers, and you send the first three chapters to every publisher on the list, and then you wait for 6 months, and then they say no. And so this is normal. And so, yeah, so I just emailed this guy, who's this editor, and... who turns out to be a really distinguished, important editor, but I didn't know who the hell he was, because why would I know the names of editors? And just, you know, hi, Pete Fry said you might like my book. Here's some chapters, you know, I hope you enjoy them. And then he emailed back and said, oh, yeah, I'll read these. And I thought, well, that's weird, because they don't ever even usually admit that they've got it. Because that, like, once they've admitted they've got it, then you can ask them what they thought, and that's big trouble. So usually they don't admit it. So he's like, oh, God, well, that's very nice. And then the next day, he emailed back and said, oh, I really enjoyed these. They made me laugh. Can you send me the rest? Because that was at the weekend. And then on Monday morning, he phoned up and said, I love this book. I really want to buy it. So it took 5 days. And normally, it might take you more like 5 years. It was really, really fast. But it was amazing. But, there's various things have happened. I felt like the gods, you know, I said it's not a good idea to have the gods on your side, but it's even worse to have them against you. And I feel like maybe they've manipulated and helped me out a little bit and sort of pushed my book along. It's been very lucky.
And I said in the introduction that your book is going to be made into a movie. Is that right? That Ben?
It won't be a movie. It will be a TV series.
Oh, okay.
It's a company of Ben Stiller, the actor Ben Stiller's company, have bought it. I think they're going to make it twice. They're going to make it once in London, and then they're going to change it and make it again in America with American characters. So there'll be two TV series, if it all goes ahead. I think what they want to do, I imagine they'll change the story completely, and they'll want to have all the gods doing loads of different things. But I quite like that. I love the idea it's going to take on a life of its own and carry on. It's
and
exciting.
And you're afraid to give your book away and let them do whatever they want?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, okay, they could really ruin it, but because it's a TV series and not a movie, they're going to change it a lot. So either they'll change it a lot and it will be terrible, and then my book will look so good in comparison. It'll be great. And people go, oh, my God, this book is the book of that awful TV series, but it's so good. So that's great. Or it will be brilliant. And then it'll be like, oh, this series is so brilliant. I must read that book. And then when they read it, it will be quite different. And they can rediscover the characters all over again. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's exciting that it's taking on a new life. If it's bad, well, you know, these things happen. But if it's good, it'll be amazing.
And do you already have a new project? And
yes, I'm writing another book now. I'm about halfway through. But I always say I'm about halfway through. Unless I'm at the very beginning or the very end, I'm always about halfway through. And it's a bit different. It's not doesn't have any supernatural characters. It's set in the real world. But it has the same, I think, the same sense of humour. And I'm trying also to do the same thing where there are more serious ideas but kind of hidden in a really fun plot. So I'm really enjoying writing it. So hopefully I'll finish it soon enough and maybe it will appear in Germany as well.
And let's talk about your sense of humour a little bit, because sometimes it's very bizarre and you have it's very visual. And is that something that you always had, or that was always in you, or?
Well, it's very hard to say. I mean, it certainly isn't something that I try to do for the book. I write very much as myself, and I tend to see the funny side in almost any situation. So yeah, the book is humorous. I find it much, much harder to write something serious, I think. But yeah, people often mention it, and I suppose I have quite an unusual sense of humor. But if it makes me laugh, which is a terrible thing to say, make yourself laugh. It's like, couldn't be more arrogant. But sometimes I'll be writing and I'll come up with a little joke and I'll be sniggering by myself at my computer going, ha, 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 that's really funny. And then I'll think, okay, that's good, that can stay in. But you just don't know. It's not like telling a joke to a friend. You know, you tell your joke to the computer and you think you're hilarious. And then it's terrifying. You hand it over and you think, some people are not going to get this. Maybe nobody will get this. And actually, you know, I had one review which was saying that it was comparing my book to King Lear and Tess of the D'Urbervilles and saying I had a really poor handle on tragedy. And I thought, I don't think you noticed, it's meant to be funny. But yeah, I mean, you just hope things that you find amusing that other people will too. But, you know, some people will and some people won't. You can't worry about it too much.
If there's a special take on life, if you always are ready to see the bizarre side of things and how things could get extreme, to always...
I think life is like that. I think life is absurd and ridiculous. And it's kind of absurd and ridiculous that I'm sitting here doing this interview. I find that completely surreal. And I'll go home and I'll tell this as a funny story because it's bonkers. Why should I be here even talking? You know, I just see these things as funny. There are some really important, serious things in life. But even sometimes at your darkest moments, you know, I don't know if anyone's had the experience that someone tells you a piece of bad news and all you can do is laugh because it's so awful. There's nothing left except to laugh. And some of my favorite books, like Catch 22, for example, is an amazing book where it's talking about really, really dark things. But the book is so funny. And it's because at the end, you have nothing left except your sense of humor. And there's always a strength. I always feel like I can master a bad situation. If I can turn something awful that happened to me into a funny story, then it's mine. I own it. I'm not a victim of it. I control it. And it's become something that makes me happy, makes other people happy, and it takes all the power out of it. So for me, humor is a kind of amazing way of feeling on top of life. And besides that, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's it's a perfect final statement. Thanks very much, Marie Phillips.
Thank you.
And yeah, the name of the book, Der Name des Buches, Götter ohne Manieren von Marie Phillips. Thanks very much. Thanks for being here. Yeah, thanks very much. It was nice talking to you.